Welcome to Association Nation. From digital content to social strategy, print power to video value, engagement to conversion, we cover the content marketing topics that matter most for your members. Today we're talking about the advocacy mission, a topic many associations understand but often struggle to communicate. When you say the word benefit to your association members, the things they think of are often tangible or at least easy to understand. The magazine or scholarly journal they get in the mail is a benefit. Continuing education, conferences, other big events, those are benefits too. And let's face it, discounts and other incentives are also benefits. Advocacy is a major mission for many associations and a major benefit for members, but it often gets lost in the discussion. It's a challenge to communicate what goes on behind the scenes on Capitol Hill and in state legislatures around the country. It's also crucial to make your content about members or readers and what advocacy really means or does for them, and not just us, us, us. But coming up with creative strategies to overcome these challenges is well worth your time. When your stakeholders know how the fight affects them, they're much more likely to join in. Our guests today know all about the need to get partners to join the fight. The Outdoor Industry Association has been advocating for proper use of public lands for years, but that advocacy became very public in the past year. Amidst a heated debate over public land policy, OIA and partners decided to move the Outdoor Retailer Show from its longtime home in Salt Lake City to Denver, taking its $50 million in economic impact with them. The association itself relocated too, which is no small feat. Today, Jennifer Pringle, VP of Marketing and Communications, and Jessica Wall, Government Affairs Manager, share the inside story of what led to that decision. More importantly, they share lessons on how content and communication kept their most valuable partners on board along the way. Why don't you talk to me a little bit about OIA in general? Who are your members and how are you serving them? And how does the Outdoor Industry Association really differ from most membership organizations out there?
So Outdoor Industry Association has been around for 28 years. And our main membership base, we have over 1,300 members, and our goal is to unite and serve the outdoor industry as it relates to our work in policy, our work in sustainability and supply chain, and then we have a lot of headway in the world of outdoor participation and generating the next, exciting the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. We're a trade organization, so we serve companies large and small, from art retailers like REI or manufacturers like the North Face. We also have service providers who are taking people out to experience the outdoors, service providers that serve the manufacturers and retailers of the outdoor industry, but companies small and large.
Talk to me about what OIA's top advocacy priorities are, and how do you really define what those priorities are? And then, for your audience, how do you communicate them effectively?
On the recreation front, our advocacy really centers on what helps get people outside, more people in some instances, making sure that people have great experiences. And recently, keeping public lands public has actually been one of the biggest advocacy efforts that we've had to take on, something I never thought in a million years we would really have to put our weight and resources behind, because it seems like a no-brainer. Public lands have been as American as apple pie and certainly the backbone to our industry. We actually call public lands and waters, sort of the centerpiece, the backbone, or the infrastructure for this massive $887 billion outdoor recreation economy. So anything in line with keeping those places open and accessible is a priority. I think over the last 8 months, we have been on the defensive side, and that's really a tough place for a trade association. But I think the silver lining is that it's brought a lot of engagement and advocacy from our members and their customers, really giving people something to care about and unify behind.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you say that, because my immediate response was going to be to you that we've actually seen a lot of success with clients that are operating on the defensive.
Exactly. We've definitely seen that. And, I could tell them, we could communicate to the industry every day about a bill that will, virtually change the way our products, are made, or or where products can be used. And I think that doesn't draw the attention that losing the ground that we've gained. And I think our industry has also been at the forefront of gaining ground in the environmental movement and the conservation movement and sustainable gear and apparel and sourcing of products. And so to think about losing that momentum that has really been, I think, you know, the cornerstone of our industry is definitely something that has brought people together and to, you know, the top CEOs of companies flying into DC to help with OIA advocacy efforts. So we've seen that, and it's interesting to hear that other organizations are seeing the same thing.
You've also made some pretty big changes in the past year. For example, the decision to move outdoor retailer and OIA out of Utah, which was their longtime home. So can you give us a sense of what kind of drove that decision?
You know, we've been in Salt Lake City for 23 years and about two shows almost every year of those 23 years, bringing in 40,000 people and over $50 million in economic contributions to the area. And our outdoor retailer show, it's not just at a convention center. It's in the restaurants and in the hotels and the neighboring lakes and mountains. And it's also, you know, we've sort of crowned Salt Lake and Utah as the epicenter of the outdoor industry. Businesses have moved there because of the trade show. It's definitely gotten an outdoor image because of all of these businesses that are in and out of the city and of the state twice a year. And so public lands are key to that. That's why we're there. We're there because of the access to the Wasatch right down the road, basically, and the access to the ski resorts and the forests. And so public lands and the protection of these places has been a topic with the Utah delegation since way before I was on board. So none of this is new. They have, you know, really been at the front line of things that are pretty harmful to our industry for quite some time. But I think we've always found, you know, that Utah could be a home and we could continue to work with the representatives and, you know, try to change some of the policies that they were trying to put in place. But with the public land sell-off that was really driven by some of the Utah members of Congress and also of the state legislature and governor, and then their request that President Trump undoes several of the monuments in Utah, which is unprecedented. It hasn't happened in the over 100 years of the Antiquities Act. We started to hear a lot louder from our membership that this was not a home for the outdoor recreation industry. And this really shouldn't be a place where we're bringing all of our gear, our equipment, our apparel, our money, our time, and our energy. If we couldn't get the elected leaders to understand where we're coming from, we couldn't come to a compromise, or, you know, just, you know, we were in a state that truly was probably the most antagonistic to the outdoor recreation industry out of all 50 states, and it didn't seem like it made sense. And so OIA has, you know, put out the request for proposal before kind of everything blew up in the spring. So we were taking steps to think about other cities and see who would hold us. It's not easy moving a multi-million-dollar trade show with 4,000 exhibitors and 40,000 people. So it takes some time, and it was definitely a process that was underway. But it did get propelled by the decision of some of our members to not come back to Utah, to basically say Utah's off limits and we're not coming back to a state that so blatantly disregards all that, you know, we feel like we bring to the state and that the public lands bring to the state. So I'd say, you know, the decision was something that we had been talking about as an association, was probably going to happen as an association. The timeline was moved because of our membership and our membership, you know, very clear desire to get out of a state that was continuing to perpetuate these threats. And so I think we ultimately had to listen to our membership.
I was just going to add something that just as a clarification, I think will be interesting to the listeners is that, you know, OIA doesn't, we don't own the trade show. You know, we partner with Outdoor Retailer owned by Emerald Expositions. Our contract is title sponsors. And so it's more the point is partnership, and it really shows the values driven nature of the outdoor industry. And the fact that this is an issue that's so important that the industry was willing to, you know, take a fairly drastic measure, you know, moving a trade show in 6 months to what Jessica said is a pretty big lift.
Yeah, and I think it's really brave. I think it's really brave what the OIA did because I think a lot of times people can be really frustrated with the organization they belong to because they feel like the organization doesn't take a clear stance, right? They're kind of riding it right in the middle, and they don't really want to, be too polarizing on either side of an issue. But in this case, OIA is really speaking on behalf of the industry as a whole, as you said. And I think, to make that move was something that was, in the best interest of the industry, and it shows that as an organization, you really are walking the walk when it comes to, what you support and what you believe as an organization. So I think it's great.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's interesting. We did a public lands march where we marched from the Salt Palace Convention Center to the Utah State Capitol, and it was really a celebration of public lands and a celebration of our industry and a thank you to Salt Lake in a higher profile way. It allowed us to say thank you, and so it was we had 3,000, almost 3,000 people, in this march, and it was pretty emotional and pretty. It was a pretty great showing, one of my personally best career experiences. There was a speaker there, and her name is Blake Spalding, and she owns Hell's Backbone Bar and Grill, and it sits in Boulder, Utah, and it serves serves patrons that are coming to go to Grand Staircase Escalante. So she really, her business benefits and thrives from public lands and national monuments specifically. So, or national monument. And she, her message was, there's lots of different opinions. Some people, feel like we could have stayed to have a seat at the table to influence, but she felt like it was super important that we gave some really strong medicine to Utah. And, I think they were calling our bluff quite a bit during the negotiating, during the process. It was strong medicine.
This is a great segue into talking a little bit about your collaboration with retailers, which is obviously, a cornerstone for your organization.
Over the last 2 years, and I think since Amy Roberts has taken the helm as our executive director, we've really taken a hard look at the work that we do as an association. And, we've always done work on behalf of our members, including our retailers, but it's gotten stretched sometimes really thin. So sometimes we're doing research and education, and we're also doing policy, and someone out wants us to focus on this issue or that issue. And so we have, our mission has been to ensure the success of the outdoor industry, which is a pretty tall order to deliver. And so what Amy really did was ask us to take a step back and say, where are we going to be the most effective, and where are we going to help the industry most? And that led us to our focus in our three pillar areas, which are policy and a lot of the work that we've talked about today in the world of advocacy, sustainability in our supply chain, and then participation. And then at the same time, we went through sort of a, I don't know, rebranding is probably the best word to think about it, but really trying to really shift and help our members better understand what we do. And we introduced a campaign called Together We're a Force. And the whole cornerstone of the campaign is collaboration, is to really show how the industry works together to on important issues, sometimes in the world of policies.
And when I and so obviously you're kind of in some ways using retailers, as influencers to help spread the word and the messaging from the OIA. Do you ever work with influencers that are kind of outside the retailing or the retail industry, I'm sorry, to help spread your messages?
Over the last 2 years, our social media effort has become one of the primary ways we communicate, and we get engagement, and we get amplification. And influencers is definitely a tool. There are a lot of outdoor industry influencers. So absolutely. And I think the best example of that is last year, President Obama visited Yosemite for the centennial, the National Park Centennial. And Jess had done a lot of work with the folks in D.C. and the Department of the Interior, on the centennial. And when the president, we found out he was going to Yosemite, she worked really closely in terms of talking points and what he was going to say. And in fact, he actually used our economic data in his speech. So a great win for OIA, a great win for the industry, and really shows the influence we've been able to make. But that allowed us to, him going to Yosemite. definitely consumers and the industry is very aware of. So we created a campaign called El Prez at El Cap, and we used influencers and social media in a big way to raise the profile of his visit, and came up with a great fun hashtag. We built kits and allowed our members and consumers to amplify his visit, and also athlete influencers was a big part of that too. So we reached out to companies like Adidas and the North Face and their incredible athletes. They, with huge followings, they were able to amplify it. In fact, just worked it so we were able to do an Instagram takeover for a day, and you know, athletes like Sasha DeJulian and Kai Leitner and Alex Honnold all took over the White House Instagram page. So talk about, you know, eyeballs, you know, people inside the industry, but many, many outside the industry who don't know climbing and don't know those things were able to see the impact of our industry and hear from those influencers.
And I think that's a great example of using influencers. And I think, you know, sometimes it's those influencers that are famous and have millions of followers and, you know, just one message from a famous climber or skier about climate change or about public lands could activate, you know, literally thousands of people. But the other way that I think we use influencers is just the fact that businesses matter now more than ever, and the business voice specifically, as well as jobs, and economy and job growth. And no one can tell that story better than a business executive. And so we have our own influencers, 1,200 of them, and more and more throughout our membership, and really using them in letters, phone calls, in district meetings, bringing them to D.C. For our Capitol Hill visits, but also to talk on panels and in briefings. And it's been amazing to see the effect that they can have on a member of Congress or an office on a topic. And it doesn't have to be, you know, the CEO of Adidas. It could be the, you know, mom and pop store in a district in North Carolina.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to say, it's not every day we ask an association about influencers and the first example they tell us is President Obama. So you guys win on in that respect. But I think it's a good point. I think you made a really great point about, you know, using different types of influencers for different audiences, because I think, you know, different people speak to different people, and people have preferences as far as who, you know, they're willing to listen to and what they consider trustworthy, especially on social media, for example. So it's kind of in the same vein of when organizations really make sure that they are providing different content types, depending on, you know, what kind of content the type of person wants to consume. So when it comes to, you know, communications tools and tactics, are there certain things that you're doing at OIA that really generate the best response for you?
I think when we got here, we basically had a weekly newsletter or biweekly newsletter that we communicated out to our members. We didn't do much communication out to the broader, you know, our broader stakeholder groups. And since I've been here, we've really taken content and storytelling, and sometimes some of the topics we're working on can be kind of complicated. So that content comes in many different forms. Sometimes, you know, video is the best way to get that message across. Other times we do listicles, you know, and other times we have more deep, in-depth stories that can really, you know, bring, you know, sustainability to life, which can be pretty heavy in some instances. But understanding our target is usually the best way. You know, we still, you know, rely on email, and it's still probably one of our crutches, you know, that we use, and it's the way we get our content out. It's the way we reach our targeted audiences. But content, you know, in general, and storytelling have played a bigger role. And like I said earlier, social media, and really trying to build, you know, stronger audiences and followers. And you know, we've really have turned those on in a big way in the last couple of years. And even more, we're using LinkedIn even more with a business message.
Talk to me a little bit about what you're doing on LinkedIn and how that's kind of expanded over time.
Sure. You know, I mean, as a trade association, it seems like if you're not there, you're missing, and you have the ability to truly influence your audiences. So on LinkedIn, you know, we look at those messages that are truly, you know, business messages. I think an example of something we're actually working on right now on the Monuments Review, and as Jess alluded to and just talked about, you know, in in April, the president did an executive order and asked the Department of the Interior, Ryan Zinke, to the secretary to do an analysis on 27 monuments. Monuments, and they're bookended by two large monuments in Utah. One is Bears Ears that President Obama designated right before he left office, and then one is a Clinton designation, Grand Staircase Escalante. And then in between, there's, 24 more, or 25 more, that are, there's some sort of calculation in terms of the size, their size, and when they were given monument status. So there's a monument review, and that, of course, is a big, that's a big attack to our industry. And so our industry has really got on board, and that's coalesced and engaged the industry. Right now we're working on something where we have a sign-on letter of over 350 CEOs and executives in the industry, great participation in that.
So on the flip side, you've talked to me a lot about what has worked. Have you had any major fails, things that you would never do again?
Yeah. I think one of the, and it's not a major fail, but I think it's what Jennifer just spoke about, going from the, bi-monthly newsletter to what works now. And part of that evolution has been, government affairs work happens really fast and decisions are made fast and bills could be passed, in an hour or introduced, or whether they're good or bad, rules could be put on the Federal Register. These things, happen at lightning pace in D.C. And for a long time, we were waiting for that bi-monthly or once a month newsletter to report out on those things or ask for engagement. And that wasn't, we weren't breaking the news to the industry because they've already read about it by the time that they got the newsletter, or it was no longer relevant because the vote had happened or decision had been made. And so what we started doing was really targeting folks, almost putting them into specific pots of things that they were interested in. So we have, if you take a company like REI, we have people at REI that are interested in our, outdoor participation work through our outdoor foundation. We have people that are interested in our retail work that Jennifer talked about. We have people that are interested in our recreation advocacy work, our trade work, maybe our climate work. So we basically created these lists of people from across the industry, within brands, within retail space, and said, you've identified yourself as someone who really cares about the recreation piece. So we're going to target you and others who care about recreation and media that cares about recreation, right? Like certain people from E&E News or certain people from Politico that cover that beat. And we're going to send you from the GA team, a quick alert the second something happens, what we call a recreation alert. And we have a trade alert and we have a government affairs alert, for more general policy, a climate alert. So we've really been able to work with the communications team to get things out that aren't on that newsletter cycle and that maybe aren't appropriate for LinkedIn or social all the time, but we've been able to write something fast, get it edited fast, and get it out to a really targeted list so that the open rate is high, the engagement rate's high, and we're able to drive at an ask or break news to the members, getting news out to the industry, and that's a place that we weren't before, so maybe one of those things that didn't work out so well, and we've turned that into something that's been really successful for us.
Let's be honest, not every association is going to face the kind of large public spotlight OAA has seen, but their approach to advocacy still offers plenty of lessons. Start with collaboration. Think about your own internal structure. How often are your storytellers communicating with your government affairs experts? The better the communication and planning between these groups, the better the content will be as a result. If there's a major upcoming bill that affects your profession or your members, for example, make sure your policy crew is briefing your communications team far in advance about what's coming, what it means for members, and what the likely outcome will be. Be ready to act when the votes come in. Collaboration with your own members and partners is key too. OIA gave prominent members the tools they needed to communicate a unified message about public lands, and the organization blended into the background. Even if you want to stay front and center, there's value in featuring the expertise your members bring to the table. Did a member help fight for a state-level bill that affects a large chunk of your profession, for example? Then don't tell the typical win story. Go behind the scenes and let that member walk colleagues through how it happened and why it matters. Don't just tell that story, though. Look at your distribution via segmented email and targeted social, and make sure the content reaches the people who will understand it most. If you've been listening to past Association Nation episodes, you know what's next. Our favorite I Like, I Wish exercise. I like that associations recognize what an important benefit advocacy is. I really wish they would move beyond the simple win story when a major bill gets passed or defeated and go deeper into what it really means for their members. I like that associations have government affairs teams dedicated to this critical work. I wish that more included those teams in editorial planning to make sure communicators are ready to tell their stories, both swiftly and accurately. Thanks for listening today. Be sure to tune in next time when we'll be moving beyond member communications and asking, how does your content strategy change when your audience is the general public?